Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel this week to the Middle East. This area of the world is also called the Cradle of Civilization because this is the home of the earliest countries, Egypt, Babylonia, and Sumeria, to name a few. Today, most of the people who live there are Arabs, many of whom still live in tribes and travel throughout the desert. While camels were once their favorite mode of transportation, today it's jeeps. And while trade between Europe and China once allowed these people to live comfortably as traders between the two, today they are known for the abundance of oil that is pumped out from beneath the vast, sandy, and dry region that makes up most of the area. For further information for children about the Middle East, I suggest EasyScienceForKids.com. We start today with a story from the country of Iran. Here is 40 Fortunes. Once, in the royal city of Isfahan, there lived a young man named Ahmed, who had a wife named Jamel. He knew no special craft or trade, but he had a shovel and a pick, and as he often told his wife, "If you can dig a hole, you can always earn enough to stay alive." That was enough for Ahmed, but it was not enough for Jamel. One day, as she often did, Jamel went to the public bath to wash herself in the hot pool and chat with the other women. But at the entrance, the woman in charge told her, "You cannot come in now. The wife of the king's royal diviner is taking the whole place for herself."
"Who does she think she is?" protested Jamel. "Just because her husband tells fortunes." But all she could do was return home, fuming all the way.
That evening, when Ahmed handed her his wages for the day, she said, "Look at these few measly coins. I won't put up with this any longer. Tomorrow you'll sit in the marketplace and be a diviner."
"Jamel, are you insane?" said Ahmed. "What do I know about fortune-telling?"
"You don't need to know a thing," said Jamel. "When anyone brings you a question, you just throw the dice and mumble something that sounds wise. It's either that or I go home to the house of my father."
So, the next day, Ahmed sold his shovel and his pick and bought the dice and the board and the robe of a fortune-teller. Then he sat in the marketplace near the public bath. Hardly had he gotten settled when there ran up to him the wife of one of the king's ministers.
"Diviner, you must help me. I wore my most precious ring to the bath today, and now it's missing. Please tell me where it is."
Ahmed gulped and cast the dice. As he desperately searched for something wise to say, he happened to glance up at the lady's cloak. There he spied a small hole, and showing through the hole a bit of her naked arm. Of course, this was quite improper for a respectable lady, so Ahmed leaned forward and whispered urgently, "Madam, I see a hole."
"A what?" asked the lady, leaning closer.
"A hole, a hole." The lady brightened.
"Of course, a hole."
She rushed back to the bath and found the hole in the wall where she had hidden her ring for safekeeping and forgotten it. Then she came back out to Ahmed.
"God be praised," she said. "You knew right where it was," and to Ahmed's amazement, she gave him a gold coin.
That evening, when Jamel saw the coin and heard the story, she said, "You see, there's nothing to it."
"God was merciful on this day," said Ahmed, "but I dare not test him on another."
"Nonsense," said Jamel. "If you want to keep your wife, you'll be back in the marketplace tomorrow." Now it happened that on that very night, at the palace of the king, the royal treasury was robbed. 40 pairs of hands carried away 40 chests of gold and jewels. The theft was reported next morning to the king.
"Bring me my royal diviner and all his assistants," he commanded.
But though the fortune tellers cast their dice and mumbled quite wisely, not one could locate the thieves or the treasure.
"Frauds," cried the king, "throw them all in prison."
Now the king had heard about the fortune-teller who had found the ring of his minister's wife, so he sent two guards to the marketplace to bring Ahmed,
who appeared trembling before him.
"Diviner," said the king, "my treasury has been robbed of 40 chests. What can you tell me about the thieves?"
Ahmed thought quickly about 40 chests being carried away. "Your Majesty, I can tell you there were 40 thieves."
"Amazing," said the king. "None of my own diviners knew as much, but now you must find the thieves and the treasure."
Ahmed felt faint. I'll do my best, Your Majesty, but it'll take some time."
"How long?" the king demanded.
40 days, Your Majesty," said Ahmed, guessing the longest he could get. "One day for each thief."
"A long time indeed," said the king. "Very well, you shall have it. If you succeed, I'll make you rich. If you don't, you'll rot with the others in prison."
Back home, Ahmed told Jamel, "You see the trouble you have caused us? In 40 days, the king will lock me away."
"Nonsense," said Jamel. "Just find the chests, like you found the ring."
"I tell you, Jamel, I found nothing. That was only by the grace of God. But this time, there's no hope."
Ahmed took some dried dates, counted out 40, and placed them in a jar.
"I will eat one of these dates each evening. That will tell me when my 40 days are done." Now it happened that one of the king's own servants was one of the 40 thieves, and he had heard the king speak with Ahmed. That same evening, he hurried to the thieves' meeting place and reported to their chief. "There is a diviner who says he will find the treasure and the thieves in 40 days."
"He's bluffing," said the chief, "but we can't afford to take a chance. Go to his house and find out what you can."
So the servant climbed up to the terrace on the flat roof of Ahmed's house, and he listened down the stairs that led inside. Just then, Ahmed took the first date from the jar and ate it. He told Jamel, "That's one." The thief was so shocked, he nearly fell down the stairs. He hurried back to the meeting place and told the chief, "This diviner has amazing powers. Without seeing me, he knew I was on the roof. I clearly heard him say, 'That's one.'"
"You must have imagined it," said the chief. "Tomorrow night, two of you will go."
So the next night, the servant returned to Ahmed's roof with another of the thieves. As they were listening, Ahmed ate a second date and said, "That's two." The thieves nearly tumbled over each other as they fled the roof and raced back to the chief. "He knew there were two of us," said the servant. "We heard him say, 'That's two.'"
"It can't be," said the chief.
So the next night after that, he sent three of the thieves, and the next night, four, then five, then six. And so it went till the 40th night, when the chief said, "This time, I'll go with you myself." So all 40 thieves climbed up to Ahmed's roof to listen. Inside, Ahmed gazed at the last date in the jar, then sadly took it out and ate it. "That's 40. The number is complete." Jamel sat beside him and gently took his hand. "Ahmed, during these 40 days, I've been thinking, I was wrong to make you be a diviner. You are what you are, and I should not have tried to make you something else. Can you forgive me?"
"I forgive you, Jamel, but the fault is mine as well. I should not have done what I knew was not wise, but none of this helps us now."
Just then came a loud banging at the door. Ahmed sighed. "The king's men already." He went to the door and unbolted it, calling, "All right, all right, I know why you're here." He swung the door open. To his astonishment, he saw 40 men kneeling before him and touching their heads to the ground again and again.
"Of course you know, O great diviner," said the chief. "Nothing can be hidden from you, but we beg you not to give us away."
Bewildered though he was, Ahmed realized that these must be the thieves. He thought fast and said, "Very well, I won't turn you in, but you must replace every bit of the treasure."
At once," cried the chief.
And before the night was through, 40 pairs of hands carried 40 chests of gold and jewels back into the king's treasury. Early the next morning, Ahmed appeared before the king.
"Your Majesty, my magic arts can find either the treasure or the thieves, but not both. Which do you choose?
The treasure, I suppose, said the king, though it's a pity not to get the thieves. The boiling oil is all ready for them. Well, never mind. Tell me where the treasure is, and I'll send my men right away.
No need, your majesty. Ahmed waved his arms in the air and called, Pishposh, wishwash, mishmosh. Then he announced, By my magic, the chests have returned to their place. The king himself went with Ahmed to the treasury and found it so.
You are truly the greatest fortune-teller of the age, he declared. From this day forth you shall be my royal diviner.
Thank you, your majesty, said Ahmed with a bow, but I'm afraid that's impossible. Finding and restoring your treasure was so difficult, it used up all my powers. I shall never be a diviner again.
What a loss, cried the king. Then I must doubly reward you. Here, take two of these chests for your own.
So Ahmed returned home to Jamel, safe, rich, and a good deal wiser. And, as any diviner could have foretold, they lived happily ever after. You are listening to Gima's Tales for Children on KCIWLP 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon. The most famous of all legends of the Middle East is of a storyteller, a beautiful woman who was called Scheherazade. She is said to have told 1,001 stories over a period of 1,001 nights in order to save her life and marry a great sultan. Here are three of the stories which she told the sultan over two of those 1,001 nights. Here is The Merchant and the Genie. There was a merchant who was possessed of great wealth in land, merchandise, and ready money. Having one day an affair of great importance to settle at a considerable distance from home, he mounted his horse, and with only a sort of cloak bag behind him, in which he had put a few biscuits and dates, he began his journey. He arrived without any accident at the place of his destination, and having finished his business, set out on his return. On the fourth day of his journey, he felt himself so overcome by the heat of the sun that he turned out of his road in order to rest under some trees by which there was a fountain. He alighted, and tying his horse to a branch of the tree, sat down on its bank to eat some biscuits and dates from his little store. When he had satisfied his hunger, he amused himself with throwing about the stones of the fruit with considerable velocity. He knelt to pray to Allah, when, still on his knees, he saw a genie, white with age and of an enormous stature, advancing toward him with a scimitar in his hand. As soon as he was close to him, he said in a most terrible tone, Get up, that I can kill you with this scimitar, as you have caused the death of my son. The merchant, alarmed by the horrible figure of this giant, as well as by the words he heard, replied in trembling accents, How can I have slain him? I do not know him, nor have I ever seen him. Did you not? Replied the giant. On your arrival here, sit down and take some dates from thy wallet, and after eating them, did you not throw the stones about on all sides? This is all true, replied the merchant. I do not deny it.
Well, then, said the other, I tell you that you have killed my son. For while you were throwing about the stones, my son passed by. One of them struck him in the eye and caused his death, and thus you have slain my son.
Ah, sire, forgive me, cried the merchant.
I have neither forgiveness nor mercy, replied the giant. At these words he lifted up his scimitar in order to strike off his head.
The merchant cried aloud, One word more, I entreat you. Have the goodness to grant me a little delay. Give me only 1 year to go and take leave of my dear wife and children, and I promise to return to this spot and submit myself entirely to your pleasure.
Take Allah to witness of the promise you have made me, said the genie.
Again I swear, replied the merchant, and you may rely on my oath. On this, the genie left him near the fountain and immediately disappeared. The merchant, on reaching home,
related faithfully all that had happened to him. On hearing the sad news, his wife uttered the most lamentable groans, and his children made the house resound with their grief. The year quickly passed. The good merchant, having settled his affairs, paid his just debts, given alms to the poor, and made provision to the best of his ability for his wife and family, returned to the destined spot on the very day he had promised. While he was waiting for the arrival of the genie, there suddenly appeared an old man leading a hind, who inquired what brought him to that desert place. The merchant related his adventure. He had scarcely finished his speech when another old man, accompanied by two black dogs, came in sight, and having heard the tale of the merchant, he also determined to remain to see the event. Soon they perceived toward the plain a thick vapor or smoke, like a column of dust raised by the wind. The vapor approached them, and then suddenly disappearing, they saw the genie, who, without noticing the others, went toward the merchant, scimitar in hand. Taking him by the arm, "Get up," said he, "that I may kill you as you have slain my son." When the old man who conducted the hind saw the genie lay hold of the merchant, was about to murder him without mercy, he threw himself at the monster's feet and, kissing them, said, "Lord genie, I humbly entreat you to hear my history and that of the hind, which you see, and if you find it more wonderful and surprising than the adventure of this merchant whose life you wish to take, may I not hope you will at least grant me one half part of the blood of this unfortunate man?" After meditating some time, the genie answered, "Well, then, I agree to it." So the old man related the following: The History of the Old Man and the Hind. "The hind is my wife. I married her, and we lived together 30 years without having any children. At the end of that time, I adopted into my family a son whom a slave had born. This act of mine filled my wife's heart with hatred and jealousy. During my absence on a journey, she availed herself of her knowledge of magic to change the slave and my adopted son into a cow and a calf, and sent them to my farm to be fed and taken care of by the steward. Immediately on my return, I inquired after my child and his mother. 'I know not where either is,' said she. She smiled and then said, 'But perhaps if you sacrifice a cow and a calf at the festival of the great Bairam, you might receive an answer.' 'A good idea,' I replied. So I ordered my bailiff to bring me the fattest cow I possessed for sacrifice. He obeyed my commands. Having bound the cow, I was about to make the sacrifice, when at the very instant she lowed most sorrowfully, and the tears even fell from her eyes. This seemed to me so extraordinary that I could not but feel compassion for her and was unable to give the fatal blow. I therefore ordered her to be taken away and another brought. 'Take her away,' said I to the steward, truly chagrined, 'and bring another in her place.' So my steward brought another cow, which I dutifully sacrificed. My wife, angered that her plan had not worked, said, 'Now I think you must sacrifice a fine young calf, because that didn't work.' Again I agreed and instructed my steward, 'If you have a very fat calf, bring it to me.' He returned with a remarkably fine calf, who, as soon as he perceived me, made so great an effort to come to me that he broke his cord. He lay down at my feet with his head on the ground, as if he endeavored to excite my compassion and to entreat me not to have the cruelty to take away his life. 'Wife,' said I, 'I will not sacrifice this calf. I wish to favor him.' She, however, did not agree to my proposal and continued to demand his sacrifice so obstinately that I was compelled to yield. I bound the calf and took the fatal knife to bury it in his throat, when he turned his eyes, filled with tears, so persuasively upon me that I had no power to execute my intention. The knife fell from my hand, and I told my wife that I was determined to have another calf. She tried every means to induce me to alter my mind. I continued firm, however, in my resolution, in spite of all she could say, promising, for the sake of appeasing her, to sacrifice this calf at the feast of Bairam on the following year. The next morning, my steward desired to speak with me in private. he informed me that his daughter, who had some knowledge of magic, wished to speak with me. On being admitted to my presence, she informed me that during my absence, my wife had turned the slave and my son into a cow and calf. She said she could not change the cow, but she could restore my son to life if I would give him to her as her husband and allow her to visit my wife with the punishment her cruelty had deserved. To these proposals, I gave my consent. The damsel then took a vessel full of water and, pronouncing over it some words I did not understand, threw the water over the calf, and he instantly regained his own form. "My son, my son!" I exclaimed, and embraced him with transport. "This damsel has destroyed the horrible charm with which you were surrounded. I am sure your gratitude will induce you to marry her, as I have already promised for you." He joyfully consented, but before they were united, the damsel changed my wife into this hind which you see here. Many years have passed. My son left for other lands with his lovely wife, so now I am journeying to find him. I did not like to trust my wife to the care of anyone during my pilgrimage, so I thought proper to carry her along with me. This is the history of myself and this hind. Can anything be more wonderful?
I agree with you, said the genie, and in consequence I grant to you a half of the blood of this merchant.
As soon as the first old man had finished, the second, who led the two black dogs, made the same request to the genie for a half of the merchant's blood, on the condition that his tale exceeded in interest the one that had just been related. On the genie signifying his assent, the old man began. The History of the Old Man and the Two Black Dogs. Great Prince of the Genies, you must know that these two black dogs, which you see here, and myself, are three brothers. Our father, when he died, left us 1,000 golden coins each. With this sum, we all embarked in business as merchants. My two brothers determined to travel, that they might trade in foreign parts. They were both unfortunate, and returned at the end of 2 years in a state of abject poverty, having lost their all. I had, in the meanwhile, prospered. I gladly received them and gave them 1,000 gold coins each, and again set them up as merchants. My brothers frequently proposed to me that I should make a voyage with them for the purpose of trade. Knowing their former lack of success, I refused to join them until, at the end of 5 years, I at length yielded to their repeated solicitations. On consulting on the merchandise to be brought for the voyage, I discovered that nothing remained of the 1,000 golden coins I had given to each. I did not reproach them. On the contrary, as my capital was increased to 6,000 golden coins, I gave them each 1,000 and kept a like sum myself, concealing the other 3,000 in a corner of my house, in order that if our voyage proved unsuccessful, we might be able to console ourselves and begin our former profession. We purchased our goods, embarked in a vessel, and set sail with a favorable wind. After sailing about a month, we arrived, without any accident, at a port where we landed and had a most advantageous sale for our merchandise. About the time that we were ready to embark on our return, I accidentally met on the seashore a female of great beauty, but very poorly dressed. She accosted me by kissing my hand and entreated me most earnestly to permit her to be my wife. I stated many difficulties to such a plan, but at length she said so much to persuade me that I ought not to regard her poverty and that I should be well satisfied with her conduct. I was quite overcome. I directly bought proper dresses for her, and after marrying her in due form, she embarked with me, and we set sail. During our voyage, I found my wife possessed of so many good qualities that I loved her every day more and more. In the meantime, my two brothers, who had not traded as advantageously as myself, and who were jealous of my prosperity, began to feel exceedingly envious. They even went so far as to conspire against my life, for one night, while my wife and I were asleep, they threw us into the sea. I had hardly, however, fallen into the water before my wife took me up and transported me to an island. As soon as it was day, she thus addressed me.
You must know that I am a fairy, and being upon the shore when you were about to sail, I wished to try the goodness of your heart, and for this purpose I presented myself before you in the disguise you saw. You acted most generously, and I am therefore delighted in finding an occasion of showing my gratitude, and I trust, my husband, that in saving your life I have not ill-rewarded the good you have done me. But I am enraged against your brothers, and I shall not be satisfied until I have taken their lives.
I listened with astonishment to the fairy, and thanked her as well as I was able for the great obligation she had conferred on me. But, madam, said I to her, I must entreat you to pardon my brothers.
I must instantly fly after these ungrateful wretches, cried she, and bring them to a just punishment. I will sink their vessel, and sink them to the bottom of the sea.
No, beautiful lady, I replied, for heaven's sake, do not execute so dreadful an intention. Remember, they are still my brothers, and that we are bound by Allah to return good for evil.
No sooner had I pronounced these words than I was transported in an instant from the island where we were to the top of my own house. I descended, opened the doors, and dug up the 3,000 golden coins which I had hidden. I afterward repaired to my shop, opened it, and received the congratulations of the merchants in the neighborhood on my arrival. When I returned home, I perceived these two black dogs, which came toward me with a submissive air. I could not imagine what this meant, but the fairy, who soon appeared, satisfied my curiosity. She said, Do not be surprised at seeing these two dogs in your house. They are your brothers. My blood ran cold on hearing this, and I inquired by what power they had been transformed into that state.
It is I, replied the fairy, who have done it, and I have sunk their ship. For the loss of the merchandise it contained, I shall recompense you. As to your brothers, I have condemned them to remain under this form for 10 years as a punishment for their evil deeds. Then, informing me where I might hear of her, she disappeared. The 10 years are now completed, and I am traveling in search of her. This, O Lord Genie, is my history. Does it not appear to you to be of a most extraordinary nature?
Yes, replied the genie. I confess it is most wonderful, and therefore I grant you the other half of the merchant's blood. And having said this, the genie disappeared, to the great joy of the merchant and of the two old men. The merchant did not omit to bestow many thanks upon his liberators, who, bidding him adieu, proceeded on their travels. He remounted his horse, returned home to his wife and children, and spent the remainder of his days with them in tranquility. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll be traveling to the home of Aloha, the Hawaiian Islands. Stay safe, have fun, and let your imagination soar. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIW LP 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon.